Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a quick digest of compelling legal issues and practical insights delivered to you in less than 20 minutes.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for the Ogletree Deacons Podcast. My name is Sarah Platt, and I am a shareholder in the Milwaukee office. And here with me today is my new colleague, Susie Watson, who joined us recently as of counsel here in the Milwaukee office. Welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. Very happy to be here.
Yeah. And in chatting with you, I discovered that you handled an FMLA jury trial that impacted a lot of the issues I see clients having every day in this challenge. I talk to clients on a regular basis about trying to manage FMLA in their workplace. It's something that is a legitimate need for a lot of employees, but also a legitimate challenge for employers. And it sounded like the case you handled brought up a lot of the questions that I talked to you about clients as well. So I thought maybe we could chat about your case and chat about things that employers can do to try to manage FMLA, particularly manage FMLA abuse, and the more difficult situations that come up that way. I see particularly manufacturing clients. You know, just this week, I think I've talked to clients about FMLA that limits an employee's ability to work overtime, you know, disruptive, intermittent use of FMLA, employees failing to provide notice when they need to take FMLA. You know, it's a whole host of issues. So do you mind telling us a little bit about the case that you could handle?
Absolutely. The case I had was an intermittent leave case. And in this particular matter, the employee had submitted a certification, an FMLA certification form, which the doctor had indicated a modest number of episodes per 6 month period. Within the first month or two alone, this employee had far exceeded the number of estimated episodes that this individual's doctor had indicated on the form. Ultimately, the company began denying the FMLA leave requests pursuant to the certification, citing the fact that it only had a certain number of designated episodes per 6 month period, and ultimately terminated the individual for violating the attendance policy. What was interesting was it raised a number of questions that I think are probably very relevant to FMLA for most employers. One of the main issues that came up in the case was the number of episodes indicated on the certification form.
And that's something I see employers dealing with all the time. It's so common for employees to use more leave than what the doctor says is going to be necessary on that certification form.
Absolutely. And one of the important things that came out of this case was we went up to the Seventh Circuit, and the Seventh Circuit had determined that indication of episodes per 6 month period or whatever it may be that the doctor indicates on a form is an estimate. It's not a designated, if you go past this, you can begin denying FMLA leave on that basis. But that also doesn't mean an employer has to just accept if an individual is going beyond that estimate. There are a lot of tools in the chest that an employer can use. And I think it also brought up this particular case issues of what the company should have considered doing versus denying the leave and ultimately terminating this individual. In this particular case, they had contacted the doctor directly and termed it a clarification, which it really was not.
Yeah, that's something that I see both of those issues. I see a lot. I think that the idea of exceeding the amount of leave, employers often think that means it's not approved FMLA. They can just deny it and count it under the attendance policy. And as the Seventh Circuit ruled, that isn't the case. It is only an estimate. And we've got to use the tools that the FMLA regulations provide at that point. And instead of a clarification there, I think the tool would have been a recertification. So clarification is allowed under the regulations when you get a certification and you're trying to figure out what it says, or is it authentic? But what that means is it authentic, meaning did the doctor actually fill it out versus the employee? And the regulations allow you to contact the doctor directly to ask that question. Or clarification, which means what do these words mean? Or what does this terrible handwriting say? It doesn't mean whether the information on the certification form is correct or accurate. Or even if there's missing information on the certification form, that's not a circumstance where an employer can go directly to the doctor. An employer needs to work through the employee in that circumstance. But I think that the case also raises a really good point that I emphasize to clients is make sure you get a complete certification on the front end. And it sounds like this employer did and was able to use that later to manage the FMLA leave. But sometimes companies get the certification form back and sort of say, well, we checked the box, we've got the form, we'll approve the leave. Mm-hmm. But if you, for example, don't have information on there about what the estimated frequency of intermittent leave is going to be, you don't have that as a tool to manage leave and manage potential abuse later on in the process. Or even the simple fact of, does the certification justify leave under the FMLA? Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes mm-hmm. you get the certification back and it suggests the leave isn't covered by the FMLA, but you got to look at the form and make sure that it does justify the leave. So the case that you had, they contacted the doctor directly under the guise of clarification when it really probably was a recertification that they were seeking at that time.
Correct.
So you said that the Seventh Circuit ruled on the case and said that you needed to treat it as an estimate and consider other options for managing leave. What happened from the case to the case from there?
It got kicked back to the Eastern District of Wisconsin. And once we were there, while ideally we would have employers using the type of tools like a recertification on the front end, we focused in the trial on the fact that when you kind of looked at the pattern that this individual had with his leave use, they very conveniently happened to fall on Mondays and Fridays, right around holidays. So we focused on that. And I think that ultimately that pattern and seeing just the sheer excessive use this individual had really convinced the jury that this individual was abusing his FMLA leave and these absences weren't really medically necessary under the FMLA.
So on the front end, those are both signs for recertification, excessive use and the Friday, Monday Leave Act situation,
yeah,
right?
Where, exactly.
Where you've got a pattern of using leave in conjunction with a weekend or a holiday or any other pattern that you see. Those are on the front end signs that you can seek recertification. I recommend that employers send a cover letter to the doctor with the certification form in that circumstance to say, hey, here's what we're seeing. And it suggests maybe the person isn't using leave in the way that you, doctor, expected they would need. Is your certification still accurate? But as you pointed out, if you get into litigation on the back end, those are also facts that you can use in defending the case. So you want to make sure that an employer has records of those things.
Right? Absolutely.
You want to have a record of the use of leave and when did those days fall. I think some of the other challenges that I have seen are overtime situations where an employee is certified from the doctor to say they can only work 40 hours a week and can't work any overtime. And that's a real challenge. And often employers call me and say, hey, do we have to abide by that? We really need this person to be able to work overtime. And some of the same tools apply there, sort of getting the medical certification to understand what's really necessary. But ultimately, that is a reduced schedule. That is something that is provided for under the FMLA. And it's a matter of tracking it correctly. I have a lot of clients who say it's a hassle, and it absolutely is a hassle to track FMLA for overtime. And so they just don't bother doing it. But I've been working on a case recently where the employee used all of their FMLA that way by missing a whole shift a week because it was in overtime. And if they hadn't been tracking it, they never would have exhausted the FMLA and so wouldn't be able to move to the point of looking at the burden that schedule poses on the company. During the FMLA period, we don't get to look at that burden, but once FMLA is exhausted, we get to say, hey, can we really sustain this schedule by the employer? But it is one that you have to track correctly. Often employers forget to consider the additional overtime hours on the front end when putting leave into the FMLA bank. You know, they say, oh, 12 weeks of FMLA at 40 hours a week, that's 480 hours of FMLA. But if somebody's working overtime, they're working more than 40 hours a week, and so should get more than 480 hours in that FMLA bank on the front end. And then you have to make sure you're taking the right number of hours out on the back end. Are there any other tools that you had identified through the case that you worked on for that employer to use to manage FMLA abuse?
Not particularly with that case, but I think there are a number of other issues that, and two of which I think are tied to procedures and policies that the company already has in place, whether it's call-in procedures or written requests for time off. And obviously, while if they have noticed, FMLA itself can't be denied, you can tie that into another policy violation. So if they aren't following the policy of calling in an absence or making a written request for the absence, you can make that a little bit of a separate issue from the FMLA itself.
That's exactly right. And I think that's one of the tools that we see to be the most helpful in managing abuse is, sure, the absence itself may be excused under the FMLA, but if the employee failed to call in before the start of the shift, therefore the employer didn't know whether to expect them or not, that can be a basis of discipline for the failure to call in, mm-hmm. even if the absence itself is protected. So making sure that those policies and expectations are documented and well communicated, I think, is really a key. Even the ones that we talked about already, recertification in and of itself can be a tool for managing FMLA abuse.
Absolutely.
There are circumstances where you can seek recertification. The general rule is if it's an indefinite leave, if it's a chronic condition, you can seek recertification at least every 6 months. If the leave is certified for a shorter period of time, you can seek recertification whenever that shorter period of time ends. But even aside from those two sort of routine requests for recertification, you can seek recertification if somebody's, as in your case, exceeding the amount of leave that's estimated on the certification form or using leave in a suspicious pattern. You can also seek recertification if you get information to suggest that somebody is abusing leave. You know, that's the classic. Somebody saw a picture on Facebook of the person out dancing when they said that they were, you know, missing work due to a broken ankle or something like that. You can seek recertification there. Another tool to use in that circumstance can be surveillance. I rarely recommend surveillance to clients just because it's so difficult to catch somebody in the act of abusing FMLA. But there are circumstances where it does make sense and can be helpful. I think second opinions are similar there. It's important to remember that you can only seek a second opinion on an initial FMLA certification, not on a recertification. But it is a tool that if you think that the information on the FMLA certification just doesn't make sense or doesn't align with what you're observing in the workplace, you might send the person for a second opinion. I have some clients who send employees for second opinions for chronic conditions when it's been years and the use seems suspicious or seems abusive. And that's one where sometimes it's helpful to wait on the certification process, not seek recertification because you can't get a second opinion on that, but wait until the next sort of calendar year turns over and get an annual certification. And then you do have the opportunity to seek a second opinion on an annual certification. So those are, that's another tool that's available to manage leave. I think also simply documenting the reasons that employees are giving for their absences each time. And sometimes at the end of an attendance management process where you're to the point of terminating somebody, it's not unusual for people to come back and say, oh, wait, those were protected by the FMLA. Those absences shouldn't be counted against me. And it's really helpful in that circumstance to have a document that records what the employee told us each time. Were they telling us, I'm out because I'm having car trouble? It's helpful if we know that. That's clearly not FMLA. Mm-hmm. Or did they report, I'm out because of my back injury? That is going to be FMLA. But if we don't have any record of what they told us, it's harder to make that case.
Absolutely. And in the same vein with that, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier with having a policy, whether it's a written request or call-in request and requiring an explanation for what the leave is, I think, especially with written requests, I would fathom that employees are less likely to lie on a written request to leave. So you can document that and make sure that that can kind of curb abuse as well if they're less likely to give an explanation unrelated to the medical necessity of the leave itself. I think having those types of call-in procedures is certainly helpful.
I think that's right. And sometimes just asking the question, right? I think sometimes people are more comfortable omitting information and perhaps taking advantage of a situation that way than they are affirmatively lying.
Absolutely.
I think far fewer people will go to the point of actually lying when asked a question. And so sometimes it's as simple as saying, why were you out on that day? Certainly if somebody has two different approved FMLA leaves, which certainly can happen, you can ask them to specify which leave it was, what was the reason for the absence in terms of which particular FMLA certification. And that way you can manage whether they're exceeding the estimated amount of leave for each reason for leave. And again, hold their feet to the fire a little bit on, is it really for one of those FMLA approved reasons? So I think this is by far one of the most challenging things that human resources professionals and employers deal with is these competing interests of employees' legitimate medical needs and the benefits that the FMLA provides, with balancing that with the needs to run a business on a day-to-day basis. And for a lot of employers, you got to have your people there in order to run the business. If there's nobody to perform the work, it simply doesn't get done. And so they're certainly both very real needs. And it's important to keep in mind the limited resources that the law provides us. One other one that I forgot to mention earlier is using the paperwork that the FMLA regulations provide for. I think they seem like a bit of a hassle, the eligibility notice and the designation notice and the certification forms. But I do think they can help make sure that there is clear communication between the parties. And in some cases where there are legitimate medical needs, it encourages communication between the employee and their doctor. When you seek that recertification and the employee goes back to the doctor and has to have a conversation with the doctor about the fact that they're missing a whole lot more work than the doctor thought they should miss, that may trigger a change in treatment. You know, I think that is in some ways the goal of that process, so employers can use it to their advantage, and hopefully it's a win-win for everybody in that circumstance as well. Thanks, Susie, for chatting with me about the FMLA, really thrilling topic here this morning.
Happy to chat, Sarah.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on iTunes or through your favorite podcast service. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.